The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Runes, the 2018 ACCS Annual Conference, copyright 2018. You may make additional copies of this recording for use by your school, but please do not sell any copies of the recording. Learn more about classical Christian education and ACCS at classicalchristian.org.
Heavenly Father, as we come before you today, you know our hearts. You know our hearts both in their brokenness and in our desire to serve faithfully and to grow our kids up to be what you want them to be. Father, we know that there's a challenge in that, a challenge of both pain tolerance and imagination. And I pray today as we walk through some of the principles behind making a secondary school schedule, I pray that you would give wisdom. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen. Okay, so I'm going to start off just by telling, well, first I wanted to get a little gauge. How many of you are school administrators? Okay, I was thinking like this topic, you know, you've got, I was looking over all the topics as I was having to walk around the way to this room. I still don't get the way this thing is set up. So I saw all the other topics and I'm like, wow, those are just like, those are exciting topics. They sound exciting, from standards to structure. Man, I don't know. You know, so, but I thought, administrators, if you know how painful it is to make a secondary school schedule, I said, there'll surely be somebody that'll show up in this setting. But I'm going to start off with a story. It's about touching a hot stove. Okay? So it's a story from the Old Testament. And you would think, if in your devotional time you spend all of your time in the Gospels and in the New Testament, I always kind of hang out in the Gospels. I never stop reading the Gospels, but make sure you get the Old Testament in there because there's so much good in it. I'm going to tell you about one of my favorite touching the hot stove stories in the Old Testament, and it's when the Israelites come out of Egypt, right? When they come out of Egypt, here's some of the things that happen. They have plagues, you know, that cause Pharaoh to release them from Egypt. They go to the Red Sea, and the Red Sea parts, and they walk over on dry land. And then the Red Sea comes back together and destroys Pharaoh's army. They get hungry, and bread falls from the sky. They don't like the diversity of their food, and quails drop on their camp, right? So you would think at some point this pattern that we see all through the wandering in the wilderness, which involves God being faithful and them complaining, being faithless, you would think that they would stop touching the hot stove. My favorite of the, so you've got all these rebellions, okay? The golden calf. You know, the rebellion before the quail. My favorite one is Numbers 12, the Miriam and Aaron rebellion. Like, these are folks that hang around with Moses. These are they go to the Moses family reunion. And still, the I am special rebellion kicks off with Miriam and Aaron. They keep on touching the hot stove. But the interesting thing about it is, in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, we find out some of the reason why God lets this happen. In 1 Corinthians 10, verse 6, he says, "Now these things happen," talking about the rebellions of the Israelites, "these things happen as examples for us, that we should not crave evil things as they also craved." So, there's a value in touching a hot stove. You learn things when you touch a hot stove. But it's better to learn from someone who has touched a hot stove themselves. So you don't have to touch it to do the learning, right? Well, I'm one of the people that have touched the hot stove. That's my qualifications for speaking to you today. Some of you probably take stock of things like retention rates. At the beginning of our school, Veritas started 23 years ago, and at the beginning of our school, we started, and we had like a K through 5, and the second year, the first year that I showed up at Veritas Academy, we started what we called the homeschool co-op, which was really like the beginnings of starting a secondary school. We had a few classes, tried to do it in a way that was kind of helped us to gauge what we're doing in secondary school. We learned a little bit. The next year, we kicked off our secondary school. We had about 13 students in our secondary school, and they were really 7th, 8th, and 9th graders. So during that year, we decided that we had this vision, and it was all-encompassing and unrealistic. Those are fun things to have together in your thing. So you have retention rates, and you know normally you're thinking your retention rates are pretty good if they're in the 90s somewhere. We retain 95% of our students. You get really excited if it's like 98% of your students. You might feel okay if it's 92% of your students. I figured out a way that year to have a retention rate that was reversed. So we kept 2 students. I convinced the entire secondary school to leave. Okay? So how do you do that? How do you do that? Well, the first thing you do is you love good things, and you love a bunch of good things. Okay? So we decided we really love textbooks. We found some really great textbooks, and we love them. And then we found all these primary sources, and we love them too. So we just said, we're just going to assign all of them. Assign all of everything that we love. Now, what would happen is that the students, you could see during the school year, they would start to be ground down, right? They would start to look grayer and grayer. And then I should have caught on. I was a lot younger at the time. I should have caught on that when the handwriting script style changes in the midst of a homework assignment, it might be that the parents are doing the homework at that point. Or when you have a father that calls you and says, is this Augstein fellow that important? Do we really need to read these Confessions of Augstein? I'm like, yeah. So what I was able to do was convince a board to continue with a headmaster who had deleted the entire secondary school in its first year. So that led to us making some decisions. It actually led to the starting of this project called the Omnibus Project at Veritas Academy, which has borne some fruit down through the ages. We made decisions. So the talk that I gave yesterday was kind of an ACCS talk, and it was like a 30,000-foot talk. These are the basic foundational things about ACCS. I am not going to solve all your problems in this talk. So some of you might want to leave right now. I'm not going to solve all your problems in this talk, but we're going to get down to more of the crop duster level, where I'm going to walk you through some of the principles and concerns that have come up over the years at Veritas Academy. I'm going to talk to you about how we analyze some of those principles and concerns and the choices that we made. That doesn't mean they're always going to be the right choices for you and for your school. You're still going to have to make the decisions, but I'm going to talk to you about some of the issues you're going to hit, some of the principles that you're going to have to consider, whether you come down on one side or the other of those principles or questions. Okay, so I'm going to start off with considerations, pre-considerations, and recriminations. Now, I want to apologize for this picture. I found this picture and I really liked it because it's how I feel when I'm trying to make a secondary schedule, okay? But then I realized what it was. If you've ever been to Europe, there are like professional beggars in Europe. And I think this is actually a beggar laying on the sidewalk. I did not know that when I picked the picture. The first time you run into these professional beggars, it's really scary. Because there's a whole liturgy to it. So my wife and I ended up in Florence at one point, and there's this old lady laying on the sidewalk. It looks like she's either tripped, but she tripped with a cup and a picture of a child. And I'm like, what's wrong? Like, we got to find the police. Like, we ran to the other side of the road, and on the other side of the road is the same old lady. in the same thing with the cup and the picture of the child. Like they were working in a team. I'm like, what are the odds, Emily, that this... And she's like, wake up, dummy. This is a scam. This is not a real thing. So I did not mean to pick a picture of a beggar, although I think that likening the head of school to a beggar laying on the sidewalk is about... It's about the right feeling when you are trying to... If you've ever had that... I was here at ACCS one summer, and I was just crying about the schedule I was trying to make out, and I was talking to David Goodwin, because I believe that David Goodwin is just smart. He worked for a technology company. He must have some kind of secret to this. And he was the head of Ambrose School at the time, and I said, David, I'm on the sixth iteration of our schedule. And he said, I'm on the 37th iteration of our schedule. I'm like, no one knows anything. So we all feel a little bit like this beggar. So, and I'm going to, in good chiastic form, I'm going to start with the recriminations. Let's just get ready. Let's get ready for the feelings that we're going to have, right? So here's the thing. You're going to, as you make out a secondary schedule in your schools, you're going to face the condemnation of parents and students. They will say things like this. Can I have this class that is not on the schedule? And you'll say, no. Like, it's not, I don't have, like, infinite money out there to satisfy all of your needs. And they'll say, like, this especially comes if you have a family that's coming into your school from a homeschooling setting. Can this class meet for 5 hours straight? Could we just have this class meet once a week for 5 hours? And you're like, no. No, you can't do that. We can't stay at the school that doesn't offer X, right? Like blackmail, right? We're going to leave. If you offer French, we'll stay. If you don't offer French, we're out of here, okay? You're also going to, so you got the condemnation of parents and students. You're also going to face the condemnation of teachers. You'll get questions like this. Don't I always get or have to get my room? You're like, it's not your room. It's just a room we have for you to teach in. Or they'll say something like, that will shorten my planning period by 15 minutes. Can you do that? I'm like, yeah, I can do that. So I come from the like primordial soup of ACCS. When we came to Veritas, my wife was a fourth grade teacher. She's returned to being a fourth grade teacher. This year was her second year back. But when we came there, she taught third and fourth grade together in one classroom, and she would teach a lesson and then assign homework and then teach a lesson to the other group, and she would just bounce like a little ball back and forth every day. When she hears a teacher say, this will cut into my planning period, it's like watching Vesuvius erupt. You know, like, boom. So, but your teachers, you're going to disappoint parents and students, and you're going to get your teachers angry at some points. And then you're going to have that condemnation of that inside voice. Now, I'm stereotyping at this point, but Mr. MacArthur, he talked about stereotyping, so I'm going to do it. So you have that voice inside you, maybe especially, I find this of the ladies that I interact with. I think that, I have four daughters and a wonderful wife, and I think that the women are so sacrificial, so especially female administrators, I find them, they want what every administrator wants, and that's for everyone, or darn near everyone, to be happy, to love the schedule that they've created with much pain, and to pay them tribute of handwritten notes or small gifts of thanks. But that ain't happening. The schedule sometimes involves choosing the better of two bad choices, and sometimes you need to tell that little voice inside you to shut up. You're going to do the best you can. A schedule is not perfect. It's the best that you can do. Okay? So those are the recriminations. The preconsiderations are this, that you need to come to terms with this. The schedule really demonstrates, it's one of the things that demonstrates what your school values. And the pleasure of getting, of producing students that fit those core values of your school, the pain that you're going through to make that schedule should cause that pleasure in the end. And then this, make sure that most of what you do in your schedule is tied to the deepest values of your school. You might have a problem if, and I've had all of these, I think I've had all these problems, your students have a ton of study halls or dead time, okay? So be on the lookout for that. The appreciation of leisure might be something that you really want your students to understand. Having immense leisure during their secondary schedule is not something that they should have. It's not something that your parents will value. The wrong kind of student will value this, though. Okay? So I have had students, this happened a few years ago especially, they said, what's the least I can do to graduate from Veritas Academy? I'm like, what? The least? We must not ask this question, right? Okay, the second thing is, you might have a problem if the things that you say you value, like Latin, don't get adequate time in the school day, okay? So you say you're all about some things, and then if you're really not giving them adequate time, maybe your schedule's not aligning with your deepest values. If time for your teachers is so disrupted by specials that they never feel like they get started, okay? So I had to do some shifting in this last year because our specials like art and music and PE had speckled all through the schedule. And I sat down with teachers at the end of the year, and they said, "I never feel like I get rolling. I never feel like I have time." So if you don't like protect those things that are special, you're going to have trouble. And if your traditions upset your academic tradition, if your traditions at your school upset your academics too much, this is what I'm dealing with right now. It's called the Friday problem, Friday second semester problem. We have field trips that we do on Fridays second semester. We have some special tests that we do. They end up on Fridays. We have some special events in our grammar school classes or our secondary school houses that end up on Friday. So if you have a class that is a Friday, that is like an elective class that's on a Friday, you're like, I was talking on the break time here with one of our electives teachers, and they're like, "Oh yeah, I'd love to do that elective again, but not on Friday." Because our school actually doesn't come together on Friday too often. Okay? And then the last thing on pre-considerations is you have to start with the end in mind. What sort of student do you want to see at the end of this? What sort of teacher or curriculum do you need to produce that kind of student? And you need to remember, and how can you keep your teachers and keep your curriculum settled and work on perfecting it? This does not mean that you should never change curriculum, but Laurie Detweiler, who was my curriculum coordinator at the beginning of our school, said this, and it's something that should be emblazoned. So you should put this up on a sign that your curriculum committee has to read. She asked, "Do you know what is worse than having bad curriculum?" That is, having new curriculum every year is worse than having bad curriculum. Okay, now I'm not advocating bad curriculum. You should go out and find good curriculum. But what you shouldn't do is keep kicking good curriculum to the curb to change it every year. You're going to leave gaps. You're going to cause problems, okay? So those are the pre-considerations. And now let's get down to considerations. So they're not right or wrong answers to these things, but I think these are issues that you have to wrestle with. The first one is a choice between going far and fast or going less challenging, but what we could call rational or easier, okay? So far and fast basically means this, especially with those students that have special giftings, what are you going to do to serve them? Are you going to make them walk in lockstep with everybody else, or are you going to find a way to push them forward? Or are you going to say what's going to happen here is we're going to give something that's challenging for the group but might actually be restraining for some students? Now, we've had to face this a few times, and I'll talk a little bit about some of them as we go through this talk. On the decision that we made at Veritas is to go far and fast. Okay, to go far and fast. So we'll talk a little bit about what that's meant on like a math track for us. But we've had students that have come in to Veritas or that have, because of their gifting, outstripped our even fast math pace. And that means we start looking around for ways to serve and feed their interests. But as a school, you're going to have to make a decision in your secondary schedule, far and fast or slower, but more rational. Okay? So then, so the next one is elective choices versus lockstep. I mentioned in my talk yesterday, I think I'm in the top five of number of accreditation visits I've done at schools for ACCS. And there are schools that take very different approaches. There are schools that have electives, and there are schools that basically keep everybody on the same lockstep schedule. That lockstep makes easier planning. Giving more elective choices is something that is a makes things harder. Okay, for our school, we chose to give some elective choices in a number of different subjects, and to keep them together in particular subjects. And I'm going to talk about why we did that later on in the talk. The next one is what we would call tracks versus non-tracks. Tracks versus non-tracks. So you have some schools that basically have tracks. So you have like a fast running track and a slow running track, or some schools get even down to, you know, particular giftings kind of tracks, like a STEM track or something like that. I think that the flavor, what I would, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the things that we've tracked a little bit or given more, recognized a gifting area for a student. I would say this, that some things about ACCS schools, I think that making sure that everybody gets something is critical. So if you would say, like, we're going to have the honors track and the non-honors track, like that, there's something about that if you, especially as you come to like the liberal arts and the humanities, I start to say, like, I hope all of the kids at your school can get some of that. The last thing that I think is a consideration that every school is going to have to face, at least in our day, is like block scheduling versus day school, what I would call 5-day-a-week classes scheduling as the norm in your school. I'm going to just take a little bit of time. We wrestled with this a little bit, and we did some block scheduling at some point, and I haven't found it to be tremendously successful. I haven't found it optimal for what we wanted for our students. We did block scheduling to try to kind of be a little bit more, make it easier for homeschoolers to kind of participate in our programs, but we never could block schedule enough for them to really be happy. So what we did was we diminished what we were doing with the kids that were day school students that were there all day, 5 days a week. We diminished what we were doing over there to try to get people to come in from over in the homeschool community. They never were, that we've not found a way to make them happy. Okay? I think you're going to have, what you could do is say this: we're going to do a university model school. And I think that might make the home, like if we would have said that, there would have been a whole market of students that would have really liked that answer from us. We decided that the 5-day-a-week day school norm is going to be the regular way that we run classes. I'm not saying there's a right or wrong in this, but I am saying that I don't. What I would encourage you not to do is what I've done, and that is swing at the middle. I don't think there's a middle. You're going to have to make a choice to be one thing or the other thing. Both things can be done really well, but what you can't do is what another stove scar that we have is trying to do both, and you really can't do it. Or I'm not seeing it done successfully. Okay, so now we're going to move over to the baseline of accreditation standards and your graduation requirements. What I'm making an argument for here is As you're thinking about your secondary school, some of you might be a young school getting ready to start secondary school, or you might be in the process of growing your secondary school, or you might be like my school. You know, we've had 15 graduating classes, which doesn't, I mean, that's not a tremendous number, but it doesn't feel the same as it did 15 years ago when it felt like, all of it felt like clay that was very moldable. Now it feels like concrete that you would have to take a hammer to and break it up. But for all of us who are thinking about building a good secondary school, here's one of the things that you should do. You should go and get the ACCS accreditation guidelines, okay? Now, I'm going to tell you, you should go and get them now, and then you should go back in a few months because we're doing a big rework on the accreditation guidelines. We're actually improving them a lot. I'm a member of the ACCS board, so we're in the process of doing that. And so go get them now. They're not going to change radically, but go get them again in 6 months, and you'll see a few clarifications on there. And what I would say is, take those standards, which are basically what ACCS is saying. Here's what classical Christian schools that do things really well. These are some of the things that we should be seeing at their school. Take those standards, and as you're thinking about what you're doing in secondary school, I would encourage you to pay attention to those standards and even to conform your practice to those standards. Because I think you should, accreditation is a very valuable thing. It's a very painful thing to have people come and look at your school and say, that's not good over there, that thing that's happening, right? It's very valuable, though. Because as you swim in your school every day, you become blind to some things that other people are going to see. And accreditation is a great way to have other people say, "Hey, you need to work on this." Okay, so conform the way your school does things to the ACCS accreditation standards. But you might say, those standards just sound like oppression, right? You're just telling us what to do. So I would say yes. But it's the good kind of oppression. Let me give you an illustration from my daughters. My oldest daughter is, and I should have put in a slide to show you, these people are very nice people. My oldest daughter is 18-year-old. She's Maddie. She was the president of our student government this year. And all of my girls take on both characteristics of the Bennett daughters in Pride and Prejudice, and they argue incessantly about which Bennett daughter they are. They also sometimes take on the characteristics of the Greek or the Norse gods. Maddie is our oldest, and Maddie in the Roman world would be something like Apollo. She brings rationality and order to the rest of the family. Okay? And we're thankful for that. When Maddie is crossed by, she's one of the kindest, most reflective, most sensitive people to everyone in the world except her three sisters. Okay? And for them, when they cross her, she turns into something like a mix of Odin and Thor. Right, it goes Norse when things go bad in our family. The two other girls in the middle, I'll leave off. But the youngest girl, Elise, who is a sixth grader this next year, is Loki. Okay, she's Loki. She does not have the same respect for Odin that the other children do. One night, my wife and I, Emily, we were sitting out on the back deck, and we were just talking, enjoying some time. And we heard an explosion in the house. And it was an explosion of emotion of epic proportion. And we jumped up and we ran in. And we found out here was what was happening. Loki, Elise, had gone to the refrigerator. And she opened up the refrigerator. And she was staring into the refrigerator, thinking about what she would eat. Now, this is not good. In our family, The parental units have given advice to children that says, close the refrigerator or know what you're looking for before you open it. Because it's our money, right? This is not our air conditioning theory here, it's by opening the fridge. So, but Elise not only opened the fridge, she decided it was going to take a while. So she grabbed the spray whipped cream, right? And while she was looking in there, she would squirt the whipped cream into her mouth every once in a while as a kind of a way to enjoy the time as she's refrigerating the house. Now, Maddie's sitting over on the couch doing her homework, and Maddie says in a sweet voice, "Elise, I don't think Mom and Dad would really want you to treat the whipped cream that way or leave the fridge open." Elise, understanding that that Odin is not, the Odin of Maddie is not really anywhere in her chain of command, right? She looks over at Maddie, and she says, I want to make the point. I'm not yours to boss around. She finds a way to do it. She takes the whipped cream, she looks at her, she puts it up to her mouth, and she sprays until it fills her entire mouth. That's when the bomb went off, okay? Now, you might say these standards feel kind of oppressive, the truth of the matter is, Maddie should probably have left Elise alone, but Maddie was right, okay? So you gain a lot just by listening to other schools and listening to people that have burned their hands a lot. That's why these standards exist. So as you're making your secondary schedule, as you're thinking about what your secondary school is going to be doing this year and next year and 5 years from now, really consider conforming what you're doing to the ACCS accreditation standards. Second thing is your graduation requirements. First thing is the process of setting them up. The standards that you have for ACCS accreditation and the standards that you have for graduation requirements, those things are going to drive your secondary schedule, okay? So here's the process of setting them up. You can have standards that are proscriptive or descriptive, okay? So proscriptive standards, I mean this. They are a list of classes that every student has to complete, okay? Descriptive standards, the way I'm using it here in this talk, are more like you have to get 3 math credits in 9th through 12th grade. So 3 years of math if your classes are 1 credit per year. We started off, again, here's another place that I burned my hand. We started off with very, very prescriptive standards. We had a list of classes that every student had to complete. And the reason we did that is we wanted a deep level of control of everything that every student did. Now here's the we have moved from that very prescriptive list to a more descriptive set of standards. And the reason we did is because of this. We started very prescriptive, but we found that good students could not transfer to our school without doing a lot more work at our school to complete that list of standards, okay? Because most homeschoolers, even homeschoolers that have done really good work, have not done logic or Latin, or they're going to have a lot to catch up on, and the prescriptive standards didn't allow us any way. So let's say that they were behind our math pace, right? We couldn't count their classes because they didn't match up with the classes that we had on the list of classes that you had to complete. So what we were doing was we were turning away students that would have reflected the deepest core values of our school. We were turning them away like the rich young ruler who turned away sadly. They wanted to come to our school, but they did not want to finish their high school when they were 20 or 21 years old. Again, burn the hand. So it's a hard sell, even for good students, to stick around for a long, long time at your school. So we moved over to a more descriptive set of graduation requirements. These graduation requirements, when you set them up, I would encourage you to get examples from other schools. You probably can get them through the Member Resource Center of the classicalchristian.org website, ACCS's website. Look at graduation requirements from other schools. I would encourage you to think about descriptive standards rather than proscriptive standards. There are good reasons to do both, but we really burned our hands on the prescriptive side of things. So the process of setting them up is you're going to have to make decisions between prescriptive and descriptive. Note this, secondly, that graduation requirements really show the values of your school. The graduation requirements should be what your school is going to live and die for the life of the student. So we have this, we have senior thesis at our school. Senior thesis is the class that, pound for pound, it causes the most tears of any class at our school. Because the students are doing something, they're usually doing, this is, in our junior thesis, we restrict them to theological topics. We play restrictor plate racing in junior thesis because it used to take them so long to pick a topic that we never got to teach them how to make a paper, right? So we restrict your topics in junior thesis. In senior thesis, you get to write about whatever you want, okay? And they usually write about things that they really love, and then they fluff up what they're writing. Like then the process of editing these things, it leads to this despair. We actually, if you go online, we had one of our students write a song. I think they posted a video on YouTube called The Senior Thesis Blues. It's a really, really cool song. But you cannot graduate from Veritas Academy without writing a senior thesis. If you're an international student, you cannot graduate from Veritas Academy without writing a senior thesis. Every year, there is some student that has in the back of their mind, I think I cannot write a senior thesis and graduate from Veritas Academy. I have this thing that we do. Eventually, our senior thesis teacher says, this student is not going to complete their senior thesis, thus they are not going to graduate. So I had this one young man come into my office, and I had him take my heart rate. I had him take my heart rate. I usually don't do cool things like this, but I thought of this idea. I had him take my heart rate, and he wrote it down. And I'm like, how's my pulse? And he's like, very good. It's like 70 beats a minute. And I said, you know, I was thinking about you not graduating from our school, and it didn't affect my heart rate at all. I'm cool with it. I'm cool with it because your teacher here says you're not going to complete your senior thesis and that means you're not going to graduate. And I just wondered if it would bother me. It doesn't bother me that much. My heart rate's flat. Go get to work. You can do this. We've seen students do miraculous almost pieces of work when they understand there is no way around some of these things on the graduation requirements. Don't bend your graduation requirements too much, or you're going to find yourself bending them endlessly, right? And then they're not really graduation requirements. They're not, okay? But I would say this, bend them more than we did at the beginning. If you have students that are, if your graduation requirements are wrecking the ability of good students that you'll be proud to have graduate from your school, If people are not coming because of your graduation requirements, take a hard look at them. Bend them once and try to bend them right. Then have a process for reviewing and changing your graduation requirements. Note this, and I say this, it seems to me now common sense, but I think I burned my arm on this one as well, and that is because you run out of hand space and eventually you just have to stick your arm on the stove to get more burn. So when you change your graduation requirements, you should grandfather everybody in, right? Grandfather means that those people, like let's say you have this epiphany. You say, now I know what we should have in graduation requirements. And I have juniors that don't have some of the things that we just changed our graduation requirements to. And man, I really want them to have it. Go down a couple notches. Grandfather those people in. You say, boy, we didn't get them everything we wanted. You're not these ninth graders that are coming in new under your new graduation requirements. You're not going to give them everything you wanted either, right? Be patient. Be patient. Don't jerk people around. Don't constantly change your graduation requirements. Use them to close doors that you inadvertently left open and to open doors to good students who fit what you want to do as graduates. Okay? Now, I'm going to move on to this lady. This is Dorothy Sayers. And this is one of the, so I'm going to start walking through then how we chose to apply these ideas at our school. But one of the key quotes for us was this quote from Sayers' essay. This means, talking about the rhetoric stage or the poetic age, this means that they are passing into the poetic age and are ready to embark on the study of rhetoric. The doors of the storehouse of knowledge should be thrown open for them to browse about as they will. So that's a scary quote. It's a scary quote because one of the directions that we felt like that was leading us was to say, how can we feed the interests, the giftings, the desires, the initial steps toward calling that we see in 11th and 12th graders? I would just say this too, just as a little backfill, is we always ask 9th graders what they want to be, and it always ends up that they're the opposite of what they say in 9th grade. So if anyone says they want to be a policeman in 9th grade, just watch that kid, because he is going to be a criminal, right? So in 9th grade, if you even say, like, we're going to just feed your desires in 9th grade, probably not a great idea. Probably not a great idea. But for 11th and 12th graders, a lot of them have a pretty good idea of what they want to do and be. And we try to do a little bit of that throwing wide the doors of the storehouse of knowledge. Okay? So that led us to put in more elective choices in our upper grades in secondary school, and that there is something that would look like tracking, although we don't call it tracking, in a few of our programs, especially math. And that starts even earlier than 11th and 12th grade. So here's what we're going to do. I'm going to talk with you now about how we chose to apply these principles. So there are subjects in which we differentiate, or we have a certain path. We differentiate by ability in certain subjects. They are science, math, and language. Science, math, and language. Okay? I think I have mathematics listed first in your outline. Is that true? Okay. I'm going to talk first about what we do in math. In math, we require 3 credits of math. 3 credits of math. That means that 3 of the 4 years of your high school time, you have to take mathematics. The average student at our school graduates with 4 credits in mathematics. Okay, but what we decided, and initially when we had those very descriptive graduation requirements, we listed out 4 math classes that you had to take. Everybody took 4. What we found was that wasn't a great fit. Wasn't a great fit for students who were transferring in that were behind our math pace, and really only 3 years of their math classes were going to be countable. It wasn't very good for kids who are going on to art school who have all the math that they need to be ready to go on. So we chose the standard of having 3 credits. Math is the subject that we have that has the most differentiation. That differentiation for us begins. So this looks a little bit like tracking. It begins in 7th grade. Okay, I'm gonna give you track 1 and track 2. And I will say this: I'll give hats off to Dale Siegenthaler, the head of our math department, Rhonda Forbes, and Shaylin Boss, our math teachers. I really like the way that they do this. 7th grade at our school. The 7th graders do algebra A. This is what we would call the faster track. They do algebra AB. Algebra AB. That's our old algebra 1. Okay? So this is all of algebra 1 in 7th grade. They do algebra AB. They do geometry in 8th grade. Algebra BC in 9th grade, which is what we used to call algebra 2, and then they do trig in their sophomore year, calc 1 in their junior year, and calc 2 in their senior year. That's the fast track. Now, those students are going to have more credits than they need. Many of them go on and take statistics as well, which is another math class that we regularly offer. So we have a lot to feed the math-hungry student. We have had students. We had one student that came to Veritas in seventh grade. I'll mention him later, but he came to Veritas in seventh grade ready for third-year calculus. So when parents sit down and talk to you about their kids being a genius, just meet one of these kids and you're like, no, actually, I know a genius. I know the genius. Your child's just really normal. So, but what we did with him was we shipped him out to a local college every year to do his math because we couldn't handle him. Okay, in seventh grade, he was beyond our top math class. But that's the fast track at Veritas. Track two starts in seventh grade. Now, listen to this linguistically. It starts in seventh grade with Algebra A. Okay, the other seventh graders are taking AB. The slower track for seventh graders is Algebra A. Everybody takes geometry together, but then the slower track goes 9th grade Algebra B, 10th grade Algebra C, and then trig, and then they can take Calc 1 or Stats their senior year. Not all of the kids on this lower track decide to take math their senior year. They might take some other elective, like an art elective or something like that. But you see, everybody gets the same algebra. Some people get it in A, B, and B, C. Some people get it in A, B, and C. I really like that. Okay? Those are the two tracks in math. The second thing I want to talk about is language. So this would be foreign language. We have a standard of 3 credits. In 7th and 8th grade, which is not in our graduation requirements, we would love to have 7th and 8th grade classes in our graduation requirements. We'd love to transcript our 7th and 8th grade classes because we think they're really impressive. No college will look at your 7th and 8th grade classes. They do not care. We have tried to make them care. They do not care about us trying to make them care. So in 7th and 8th grade, everybody has a class of Latin, and then they have a class of Greek in 8th grade, and then they make a choice at Veritas. They can either they have to commit to doing 2 years of Spanish or 2 years of Latin in their 9th and 10th grade. Okay? What we found is that we can keep whatever, if a student has passed through, has met our language requirements going into 9th grade, we can keep them all together in Spanish 1 and 2 or in Latin 1 and 2 in 9th and 10th grade. We cannot keep them together longer than that, though. Okay? Some students are not ready to go fast. They might not like studying language. And if you try to keep them together with the kids that really want to go fast, it's not going to work. So what we do is we have 2 years, 9th and 10th, that everybody stays together. And then we have the time when you can hop off the train, because the train is going to pick up speed for Latin 3 and 4 and for Spanish 3 and 4. And what we do is we say, if you don't want to complete Spanish 3 and 4 or Latin 3 and 4, hop off the train and take 1 year of additional language. This last year at our school, it was Russian. It was a lot of fun. And some kids found their love for language stirred up. It really doesn't matter to us what that language would be. It's probably not going to be Russian this year. We just want some way for these students to complete their language requirement of 3 credits. Okay? Then in science, we also have a 3-credit requirement for 9th through 12th grade. In 7th and 8th grade, they take earth science and physical science, which are really just prep for the high school sciences. And then everybody has to take biology and chemistry, and then they can choose from one or more classes of advanced chemistry, physics, and anatomy and physiology in there. And sometimes we offer a different special class than that. But those are the 3 classes. They have to take at least one of them in their junior and senior years. Okay? Now, for a lot of our students, we had 40% of our graduating class this year that went into medical studies, nursing, doctoring of some sort as they moved on to college. 40%. Never had that high a percentage before. Probably never will have that high a percentage afterward. All of them took almost all of these classes. The bio people especially would take advanced chemistry and physics, advanced chemistry and anatomy and physiology, right? So again, What I would say in science is, you're going to feed, in science you're kind of feeding two different things. They're the engineering people over here that are kind of finding that vision for life that God's calling them in that direction. You're going to find the medical people over here. Try to have something that feeds both of them as you're trying to push them in that 11th and 12th grade. So those are the areas where we have a lot of differentiation, okay, between students who might have a gifting in math or language or science, okay? Then we have some classes where we keep the students together. And those are mainly in what we call the paradigm disciplines, which you can see the way that we walk them through 7th grade. It's up on the board here. 7th grade, Logic 1. 8th grade, Logic 2. 10th grade, Composition. 9th grade, Composition. 10th grade, Rhetoric. One semester of junior thesis and apologetics during their junior year, and then senior thesis their senior year. We just keep everybody together. And it's pretty deeply because we think that students, in Omnibus as well, history, theology, and literature, which are really, that's the way we do our humanities or liberal arts classes at Veritas. We keep everybody together because we think everybody should basically have the same stuff there. Okay, that doesn't mean that everybody's senior thesis is going to be of the same quality. It just means that everybody that graduates from Veritas Academy is going to be able to write a senior thesis paper. Okay, everybody that graduates from Veritas Academy is going to be taken through Omnibus. Okay, so we allow for differentiation in some subjects, which allows for us to push kids more, especially in an area of gifting. We keep everybody together in some subjects. I'm going to talk quickly about electives. Electives. So you might say we're not going to have electives. I would encourage you to think about having them, even though I will admit this, it is a mess and a headache for administrators sometimes. So when to schedule electives? We have tried at first period. We did this because we found another school that worked their electives on this theory, that we can get people from our parental group of people that have special giftings that can come in from 8 to 9 and then go across town and be at work 10 minutes after 9 and be able to teach an elective for us. I thought that was a really cool idea. It didn't work well for us because for our electives, we don't require you to take an elective every day that we offer electives, so you can have a study hall once or twice a week. And having study halls first period in the day is the worst thing that you can do. Because kids do this. When you say, have you done your homework? They say, ah, no problem. I got study hall first thing tomorrow. Or they wake up in the morning and they say, I'm not feeling too good. That means I would like to sleep through the study hall and just go to school second period, right? Because I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to make... Don't have study halls first period. If you have electives first period, which might be a good fit for your school, don't let them take any study halls. They will abuse it. What we found was the best time for us to schedule it was around lunch, right in the middle of the day. We have some electives classes. So that's when we have like we do a lot of our art and music in the middle of the day. We do some really fun electives. We had an entrepreneurship elective this year where they actually started a business. We had a computer programming elective. But we have some really fun electives. We have them fourth period, which is the period before lunch for us, for our 9th through 12th graders, and 5th period. We have a smaller number of electives for our 7th and 8th graders. Everybody in 7th and 8th grade has to take one music class a year, and in 9th through 12th grade, they have to get one credit of music, since our choir is a half credit a year. Usually they're at least having to do choir or choir and ensemble for a year or two, which gives us a great chance to sell our boys on staying in choir. Okay, so the question you're going to be asked, how elective are your electives? So you need to make a decision about that. I said, when I tell kids, no, you have to take a class then, they say, it's an elective. And they start getting dictionary definitional on me. An elective means I have a choice. I'm like, you have a limited choice. It's a limited elective. So just think about that. The factors, think about what you want to produce. We have some really fun electives that just stir up the loves of our students. My dean of students taught a photography elective this year that was a lot of fun. We have kids that work in the yearbook during that kind of time period. Think about the giftings that you have in your community. Sometimes you'll have teachers that really have hobbies or the things that they really, really love. And if you say, hey, you can teach an elective in this, they would just love that, okay? And then find out also the interests of your students. And I even get down to knowing the interests of particular classes, okay? So sometimes you're going to find a class that you have a lot of artists in that class. It would be a good time to offer some additional art electives that next year. Okay, so now instead of burning yourself on the stove, you're cooking with a hot stove. But I would say one last thing is, when you're thinking about the best sources of information on how well your schedule is working, is talking with your seniors and then listening to your alumni as well. How could we have served you better? What was lacking? When you got to college to do that thing that you love doing. And you can't fix all of these things, but at least listen to them so that you would have a sense of kind of what's missing. Now, I think I've run down almost all of my time here, right on the minute. If there is a question or two, I will take them now, and then I will get you dismissed and ready for the next workshop. Yes? Yeah. So we have seven periods a day. Two of those periods are devoted to omnibus, okay? Those periods are 48 minutes long, a five-minute passing period in between, which is never enough time for some students and always enough time for diligent students. They can get from one place to another. So, but we do two periods of omnibus each day. We try to keep them together, but they're not always. Sometimes the schedule forces them apart. My omnibus teachers cry when they have a fifth or seventh period. Fifth period is the period after lunch. We call it the period of drowsiness. And then seventh period, of course, is the eschatology of each day. Yeah. Well, we did block schedule. I experienced block schedule when I was in seminary a little bit. And we did block schedule at some points at Veritas. Here's what I would call, so I'm not saying it can't be done well. What I found as a student in seminary, it's true all the way up to graduate school, and what I found as we tried to do it at Veritas, where we'd have some classes meeting for two periods in a row, is that most of our teachers really didn't teach two periods then. They really turned the jets off somewhere about one-thirds. So we felt like we were not getting every day what we could have gotten in the 2 days if we would have had separate periods. That's why we didn't do it. Some people could probably tell you that it worked really well at their school, so I'm not saying it's a right or wrong decision. I'm just saying it didn't work well at our school. Yeah, in the back. Yeah. The answer is we have tried that, and at some points there are particular experiments where our science teachers will say, hey, we have something that's going to go 15 minutes over, so we talk to the teacher in the next class and have the class show up late and then extend maybe the period of the... That gets messy. We'd rather deal with it that way. A lot of our science experiments, we make the teacher get really ready to go, and then we get it done, or we leave it set up and make it a 2-day thing that they come back to the next day. Okay, one last question. Yeah. Yeah. No, it never does function like a block, because we divide it up between primary and secondary evenly, which is not what the book does. I'm responsible for the book, and I'm responsible for the schedule. So the consistency is the hobgoblin of small minds, right? but we divide it up equally. We can't. So I have a rule that nobody teaches two sections of Omnibus at the same grade, because different students like vibe better with different teachers, and I just don't want you to have the one teacher that you don't vibe well with. So everybody has two different Omnibus teachers, so they move from one to another, so it never functions like a block, unless there's something special. Like if we have the Rivendell Feast, yeah, it functions like a block, and your teachers are dressed up like Elrond and Gandalf. But that's not normal. We don't dress up like Elrond and Gandalf every day. Okay? Oh, one last one. Yeah.
How many of those omnibus books are you actually reading through?
Yeah. So we do as much as we can. There's a list of books that I go over with the teachers every year. We have an essentials list that you cannot skip. So in each of the omnibus books, there's some years when we've got close to getting through all of the books, but that's really with a pretty gifted class. I give my teachers some flexibility to slow down or speed up based on what they find in their class and how quickly they can go. So I think you have to have teachers and administrators that are watching how you press on the accelerator and brake with different classes, because what you don't want to do is get to the end of the year, have all of your teachers quit, and lose all of your students. Yeah. So I would allow for some variation there. Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.